Losing your job after years of dedicated service is traumatic. Make sure that you receive the proper notice and financial compensation.
People who come into your office will routinely burst into tears after being let go from a job that they've had for a number of years that they feel as committed to sometimes as they feel to their own family. And then when that gets taken away, inevitably there's a sense of loss. And as their counsel and giving them advice, you have to be compassionate. And it's not hard to feel their pain.
If you've been let go, contact employment lawyer Craig Lewis at employmentlawyermississauga.com. Everyday women and men
become legends. Sins to go against. All right, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. That was a solid hour with Jack DeKaiser here on the Drew Marshall Show. Also joining me in studio right now is a couple of good old pals. Sounds like we're Dukes of Hazzard here. Good old boys. Gordo and Tim the Tool from all the way back in our teenage days. Guys, thanks for being with us the entire show. Tim, just thanks for being with us. Dr. Alpheda King is, you know, here's a weird thing. I want to say this about her before she comes on the line here. I'm going to say she's a force to be reckoned with because she's got the heritage, the name, the pedigree, so to speak, right? She's got the whole force of the King family legacy behind her. But she's so much more than that. Like, you know, so what? You're born into the family.
Yeah.
If you can't bring it, then you shouldn't. But she can bring it, and she does time and time and time again. I watched about 37 news clips of her yesterday. She's interviewed by a whole bunch of, you know, all the bigwigs out there. Mostly Fox, right? Tim, your favorite television show.
Yeah.
But she is a noted civil rights activist and the daughter of the late civil rights activist Reverend A.D. King and his wife Naomi Barbara King. She grew up in the civil rights movement led by her uncle Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Her family home is in Birmingham, Alabama, and it was bombed as her father's church office in Louisville, Kentucky. So, you know, both these places bombed. Her dad's office and the home.
Right.
So many questions for this woman, so let's get her on the line here. Dr. Alpheda King. Dr. King, I want to know, first off, how many interviews you do in a month, because you seem to be everywhere in the media. You must do a lot of them, right?
Well, Drew, let me first say hello to you and your listeners and your comrades who are there with you. And to really answer that question, yes, maybe 18 to over 20 a month. And some of that is driven, really, actually, I have my own radio show with Emmanuel Booth, Changing Your Community Broadcast, and then I am a Fox contributor and a Newsmax contributor. And so I kind of have several releases that I put out during a month, and it generates and drives that traffic. That's what happens.
Well, that's probably why I saw you everywhere, and I mean everywhere. It was unbelievable. So I've got about four questions I want to start off with. We're going to push play, and away we go. You ready?
I'm ready.
If you could say one thing to Mark Zuckerberg, what would it be? If you could say one thing to Mark Zuckerberg, what would it be?
Oh, my goodness. That's a hard one to answer because I'm not up to speed with Mark and everything. So
but, you know, you and Facebook haven't had the best relationship.
Well, that's true, but he did let us back on, so that's what I'm trying to say. With the movie Roe versus Wade, we were doing the regular crowd fund and all of that, and Facebook blocked us from the Roe versus Wade crowdfunding fundraiser, so it gave us some challenges with me as the executive producer. And then Nick Loeb, who created it, wrote the script, he's an executive producer as well, Kathy. The whole team. So, and we've got even Oscar winners and Screen Actors Guild folks, all that high caliber work, and we were blocked. So I would say either you believe in freedom of speech or you don't. And to make a short sentence,
yeah,
that's what I would say.
Okay. All right. Here's the next one. If Starbucks called to ask you to teach their staff something about diversity training or anti-bias training or, I don't know, how to get along with everyone training, what would you say to the Starbucks staff?
Well, I actually said this, and I actually blogged it, and it did go viral. and it wasn't necessarily intentional, but I spoke very quickly and said, it's time for you to wake up and smell your own coffee. That's exactly what I put out there. I really did. And to explain that, if you really care about racial justice, and you have to admit that we are one blood, one race, Acts 17:26, of one blood God made all people. So we're not separate races. But if you want to deal with racism and the problem of racism, then what they do is a matching fund donation at Starbucks. So if an employee contributes to an organization and then Starbucks will match it, well, one of those organizations is Planned Parenthood. And the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, was very much a eugenist, a racist. She did lectures for the Ku Klux Klan, for example. And she, and I'm paraphrasing, said, colored people are like weeds. They need to be exterminated. We don't want the word to get out, so let's cultivate their leaders. And they gave all kinds of grants and scholarships and awards to folks with the agenda in mind, let's lower the population. In her day, they called us Negroes, but we African Americans now. Huh. So I would say to Starbucks, wake up and smell your own coffee.
Oh, man. All right. Here's the next one. If Bono had called you to ask for your advice before the abortion vote in Ireland, what would you say?
I really, and not just him, Liam Nelson, several. I was so disturbed because these are folks that I've admired their work, supported it, and, you know, gone to see them or listen to them and in their artistry and all of that. But it's misguided compassion. And I would say, you know, a woman has a right to choose what she does with her body. Absolutely. But the baby is a person, too. Where's the lawyer for the baby? If we're going to be compassionate, we've got to do it from the womb to the tomb. And that means people should be able to be born, to live through every human experience. And some of them are absolutely terrible. But killing people will not correct any of these problems. And then we don't want to euthanize the elderly either. So that is what I would recommend, that we be genuinely compassionate to all human beings, no matter how small, disenfranchised, hurt, suffering. Mm-hmm. We just give the same love to everybody.
We should have started off this interview with One Love, hey?
Absolutely.
Sorry. Come on, Tim. Pick the music better, will you, Tim?
I tried to pick one that, from the movie that had her uncle in it.
Oh, right. Was that Selma?
That one was good, too, though. I love that song. So that was
okay. Oh, she liked the song, Tim.
There you
go. Good boy, Timmy.
And
good boy.
I got one, a biscuit. I got one that talks about her uncle on the way out, too. So
okay.
All back
right.
off.
All right. Hey, One Love. Leave
okay,
me alone.
Sorry.
And I've got a song that I wrote, too. You can look for it. Let Freedom Ring by Alveda King. And it talks about Martin Luther King, and it says, thank God that King had a dream. And that one, it's an anthem, so it's out there, too. Let freedom ring.
All right. Tim, try to find that one, will you? Get on it.
Okay.
He just doesn't know what he's doing. I'm sorry, Dr. King. He just...
But Selma was really good.
All right. No, he doesn't need credit. That's the last thing he needs. All right, let's go to the next one. Here's the next one.
Okay.
If Donald Trump tweeted out a message to you asking for help with his hair, what would you say?
I would say, sir, at your age, you're doing well to have hair.
Oh, stop. Come on.
That's what I would say. You know, people talk about my hair. It's been called a joke and all kinds of things. My hair is white, but I didn't like the salt and pepper, so I went to salt and ginger. And it's a very unusual look. And people, you know, either you like it or you don't. And I get all kind of comments. So I think I'm 67. And how old is President Trump? He just had a birthday.
83. No, I'm kidding. I don't know.
70.
Yeah.
But to still have hair at this age is a miracle. So yeah. That's what I'd say.
Okay. All right. What do you think, this is the only Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. question I'm going to ask you, okay? Because you're on the show today because I want to hear about your spiritual journey. But let me ask you this. What would your uncle, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., you know those bracelets, what would Jesus do? What would Martin Luther King Jr. do today? What would Uncle ML do today? Is there anything that he would, like, what would be at the top of his list today, do you think?
I could say this with a certainty, having grown up in our family, and it's the philosophy of the whole family, not just Uncle Emil. My dad, Reverend A.D. King, Daddy was killed and thrown in a swimming pool the year after Uncle Emil was shot, you know. And my grandmother, Alberta, was shot playing the Lord's Prayer at church. So we've gone through so many things. My mother just recently came to me. She lives with me. We just moved into a home. And one of the contractors was here, and he says, my daughter read your book. She had to write about you at school. I said, my God, whoever thought that I live enough generations to keep hearing this kind of thing that the young people are following. And then my mother, a little later, brought a skirt to me, and it had a rip in it. And you could tell it was a very dated skirt. And she said to me, this is the skirt. It was a two-piece outfit that I was wearing when the home was bombed in Birmingham in 1963. And she said, I've just kept it through the years, and I just thought that it might be a historic piece. So here I have the Latino contractor here working, have my mother showing me the skirt, and I'm thinking back through the generations. But my uncle said, during his lifetime, I have decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. He said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And he says, when, and this was a Christmas sermon in 63, before he was, let's see, it was in April, so it must have been in 62. He says, when you value the human personality, you won't kill anybody. So those are words that are so timeless, and they work now. And so the same thing, the love thing, and that's the love of God, not just the human love, and that it has so many facets, but God's love is so comprehensive. He would encourage us not to be in strife, but to absolutely love each other. And I know that's what he would say. I mean, because he said it throughout his whole lifetime. He and Reverend Evangelist Billy Graham ministered together in New York City. And the message was still love. And Billy Graham said, I'm not doing any more segregated meetings. I'm going to call this man Martin Luther King Jr. up here, and we're going to minister together. And they did. Oh, I'm sorry about that background noise. Wow. Okay.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Sometimes we have some horrible background noise here, but it's Tim, and he's leaving the studio right now. So.
Oh, my goodness.
That's okay.
Hey, listen.
Yeah.
I'm going to need your email address, because I'm going to send a link to that song, Let Freedom Ring, if you don't mind.
Yeah, yeah. I think Tim may have found it already. That's how good he is. But he's left the room, and I've just given him a compliment. Don't tell him I like him. Okay?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
All right. Dr. Alveda King on the line with us, guardian of the King family legacy. What the heck does that mean?
Well, in my generation, I'm the oldest of the three children of Martin Luther King Sr. and Alberta Williams King. Christine was born first, Martin was born next, and then Alfred, my dad, A.D. And I'm the firstborn of the generation of their children. And so in every generation, especially in the African-American tradition, you have oral history as well as written history. And so my Aunt Christine wrote several books, my cousin Angela Ferris Watkins. I think most of us in this generation are published either in audio or the written language. But it's my job to keep the message of that faith, hope, and love before us and to resolve all of our differences peacefully and do our best to model that before the world. And that's my job as a guardian of the King family legacy.
Hmm. Dr. King, what? Okay, here's the awkwardness, right? I mean, I'm just a middle-aged, awkward, white, heterosexual, North American male. Apparently, I have no right to anything anymore, and I don't know anything. I'm looking at Tim because this is that's your motto, isn't it?
It is.
We're idiots.
Yes.
Yeah. But
and
all my fault.
We're just ever growing, ever learning.
Okay. Yes. All right, that'll work. But, Dr. King, what have you seen that I will just never really comprehend?
That is such a difficult question because I'm just the smallest thing. In my new home, there's a frog that sings to me every night.
I will not comprehend that.
A little baby turtle walking through the yard, you know. And those are things, how did God have time to make that and still love us and still love me and still love you? So
No, but listen, your house was bombed.
Yeah.
I'm never going to get what that feels like. You know, your dad's office bomb. Your family members have been killed. I'm never going to understand that. There are certain things that you have seen that I'm just never going to get.
And but so, I bet you there's some things that you've seen that I wouldn't get either. So these are unique circumstances. And because you can't get that, you didn't have the walk that I've had. Mm. But your walk is unique, too, and it's had pain and joy. Every human life has that. And some people will say, well, you haven't suffered what I've suffered. You know, my father just died, or I just lost all my money, or this or that. And I said, and that is your tipping point. Mm-hmm. Mine may be different, but all of us in this human experience, we've all seen some things. And that's why I say it's the wonder. It's the frog singing to me every night and the turtle walking through the yard. That's as incomprehensible as all the sadness and all the tragedy.
But have you ever sat on a panel, maybe in a debate, and looked across the table at the average middle-aged white guy and gone, sir, you don't know what you're talking about?
I have many, many times. I have to explain it. But this is not just for Caucasians or anybody, any ethnicity, because we're all one race. But people did not understand white privilege. A very close Caucasian friend of mine, and she was just arguing. No, well, I'm poor, and I'm white, and I've been poor, and I didn't have. I said, no, but you don't understand the system that gave us redlining that we had to march against. And that's when I first went to jail in the 60s for the fair housing. And I said, so when the soldiers came back from World War II, there was an inside agreement in government that they would pass legislation and give the veterans $30,000 mortgages as part of their welcome home package, so to speak. And they said, well, give liberally to the whites, as they called them back then, I say Caucasian, but give fewer to the Negroes or the blacks. And then they made it harder if you were black, and it's still like that today, actually, for you to get a mortgage, a loan, and et cetera. And it was redlining, and they went so far when I said, just the forces of government and the underbelly of all this evil. It has nothing to really do with skin color, but made a decision that we would zone the zip code. And you could tell when somebody applied for a loan or a grant where they live. And the first three numbers of the Social Security number will often tell you the ethnicity, sometimes the socioeconomic status of a person. And so they could do this redlining and selective lending. And it's the interest rates are higher in the black community, all of that. People are not necessarily taught how to fix their credit before they go to apply for a loan and all of that kind of thing. So that is what was called white privilege. Mm-hmm. And it still exists today, but the system has been exposed and it's being broken down. The prison system, and a lot of people really don't understand this, when President Clinton and Mrs. Clinton were in agreement with the privatization of jails. When she was running for office, she said it was terrible, but a few years before that, they needed people in jail. So they went after the low-hanging fruit, which happened to have been African-Americans, and they raised the penalty on marijuana to the state of to the felonious state. It became a felony, and so many blacks were arrested and to fill up the jails. And there were other circumstances that were similar. And so now you have an unjust system in the justice system, unjust in the abortion situation. All of this genocide and eugenics has occurred, and a lot of that had to do with a system that would protect what was called the white community, really the Caucasian community. So all of this is now being exposed. People are understanding, and the young people say, we're not going to buy that. We're not going to discriminate on skin color. We're just not doing it.
Right.
And so you see much more of crossing across what people call color lines now.
Okay, so Canada is just about to legalize marijuana. And what mm-hmm. I just heard you say was that your government turned marijuana into a felony in order to put black people into prison. If I heard you right.
The jails up, and it was a low-hanging fruit, which were the black folks.
Okay, all right. So, in other words, are you...
Mostly black people were doing the marijuana, and the people that could afford the more designer kind of drugs and things were doing something else. So it was easy to sweep through and pick up the marijuana.
Right. Okay, right. So following through on the rest of this conversation, would you then be pleased with the fact that Canada has made marijuana legal or is about to make marijuana legal. Therefore, you know, as you said, the low-hanging fruit, those in lower economic, socioeconomic areas who can only afford, you know, weed and not the designer drugs, they're not going to end up in our prison systems. Then you must be happy with the fact that marijuana will be legal here soon.
I have not really made a genuine decision upon that. And I think all the time that if we do our jobs, and I say we, I'm a Christian evangelist, in that spiritual realm, and I've learned, I was born again in 1983, and I have become, over those years, evangelist Alveda King, with a genuine relationship with the Lord. And if people who say we're spiritual, and the highest form of spirituality is love, agape love, and can teach and train people, you won't have to have these battles over whether abortion should be legal, marijuana should be legal, just all types of things. Should prostitution be legal? Certainly human traffic should not be legal. We know that. Right. But we need to do more spiritual work along with trying to do it by the government or legal action. And so my vote is still out on whether marijuana should be legal or not. I need to run away from you. We've been a little longer than I usually go.
Okay. Well, I wish you all the best. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. God bless you.
Bye. Bye.